what we're interested in is trying to move forward a project that provides Alaska with the energy security that they need.
Lawmakers compromise to push an in-state gas line project. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, the 9th of April. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a former Anchorage Coast Guard commander is busted back to lieutenant after sexual misconduct charges.
Being reduced from an 06 to an 03 is a significant pay cut.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Connect with Alaska businesses seeking qualified Alaskans for hundreds of jobs in oil and gas, healthcare, and dozens of other career fields by visiting Alexis, the state of Alaska's virtual career center. When you register at alexsys.alaska.gov, your experience and qualifications will be matched with real-time job postings from Alaska employers. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
A gas line directly from the North Slope to South Central Alaska got extra force today as sponsors of two competing development paths began to work together. A bill sponsored by House Speaker Kenai Republican Mike Chenault would set up a semi-independent development team headed by the executive director of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, Dan Fauske, with the mandate of having a plan completely ready for a legislative go-ahead decision in the summer of 2011. Senate Resources Co-Chair Republican Liesl McGuire had proposed giving more responsibility to the Alaska Railroad. Chenault says they recognized that their mutual goal was to get a project built, not to debate their separate merits.
I don't need the political cover. I don't think that the senator needs it. No one sitting at this table needs it. What we're interested in is trying to move forward a project that provides Alaska with the energy security that they need. And we feel this is the best way to get us there.
The new compromise will allow Fauske to head up the development team, consisting of the governor's in-state gas line coordinator, the chief executive officer of the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority, the commissioner of the State Department of Transportation, and the chairman of the board of the railroad, John Binkley. They have the same basic requirements as Chenault proposed. That measure has already passed the House and needs only Senate approval. Fauske and the House Housing Finance Corporation have experience dealing with the economics of managing projects. Fauske says he's more interested in what can be gathered from the other people working on the project, and he's seeing a lot of optimism from all directions.
A nice visit with the governor yesterday, and I sensed a lot of excitement about moving forward with the process. I also had a nice meeting with John Binkley yesterday. We met for probably an hour in my office. I'm thrilled by the excitement that I'm seeing from people. What I bring is the ability to get a good team together, share information, and try and move something forward, and I enjoy doing that.
The formal compromise requires action in both the House and Senate before going to the governor. Once the work begins, Fauske will give monthly reports to lawmakers and will recommend to next year's legislature what statutory changes they will need to complete their planning. Legislators today rejected two of Governor Parnell's appointments to governmental services while approving 72 others named to fill vacancies on boards and commissions as well as top-level cabinet jobs. Among those receiving legislative approval were Daniel Sullivan as Attorney General, Thomas Katkus to head the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and Larry Hardig, the Commissioner of Environmental Conservation, as the designee to fill the Lieutenant Governor's office if a vacancy should occur. The most opposition arose over the appointment of the executive director of the Pregnancy Resource Center in Fairbanks to fill a position on the Board of Nursing. Statutes require that the position be filled by an individual with recent work experience as a nurse. By a vote of 34 to 24, Nancy Benouver was rejected, with most of the debate centering on whether she met the statutory requirements for the job. Opponents pointed out, although Benouver was trained as a nurse, she has not worked as one since 1993. Statutes clearly require she would have needed to work for 4 years prior to meeting the qualifications. Wrangell Republican Peggy Wilson, herself a nurse, agreed with the opposition.
from what I understand, she doesn't supervise nurses, she supervises counselors. So I really feel that from what I've heard and from what I understand, that is, she is a very, very wonderful person. She's done all kinds of things for the community, and the people there really, really respect her very much. And so I'm sure not saying anything against that. I respect what she does in the job that she has now, but I really don't think she probably is qualified, and because of that, I'll be casting a no vote.
The other appointee rejected by the joint session was Al Barrett, the governor's pick for an appointment to the Board of Game. Barrett's appointment came into question after the 44-year-old Fairbanks man was seen in an internet video skinning a wolf and citing the Bible to explain man's dominion over animals. 31 legislators voted against Barrett's confirmation, while 27 voted in favor. Sitka's Ben Grusendorf was reappointed to the Board of Game without objection. Former Coast Guard Sector Anchorage Commander Captain Herbert Hamilton was given the maximum allowable punishment at an admiral's mass today and will retire on July 1st in the grade of lieutenant with a general discharge in lieu of trial by a general court-martial. Hamilton was relieved of command in 2009. An investigation conducted by the Coast Guard Investigative Service revealed that Hamilton had inappropriate relationships with several women, including officer and enlisted Coast Guard members and civilians, over a period of more than 13 years. Lieutenant Eric Egan is Chief of External Affairs for the 17th Coast Guard District. Egan says the charges were serious, and the downgrade in rank reflects that.
Punishment is proportionate to the misconduct. Being reduced from an 06 to an 03 is a significant pay cut. And he is getting a 60-days restriction and forfeiture of 1 month's pay.
Hamilton also was charged with misusing government computers and cell phones, making false official statements, and soliciting an enlisted member to destroy evidence. Retirement in the grade of lieutenant instead of captain will result in a potential future retired pay loss of approximately $1.8 million. He will depart the service with a general discharge rather than an honorable discharge. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, savings for Alaskans that will come with the health care overhaul.
Roughly $2,000 a year is what we pay in Alaska, those of us who have health insurance, to cover those who don't have health insurance.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Association of Alaska School Boards. Parents that read to their children foster early learning and educational development for children and youth. Information at aasb.org. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
The Lemon Creek Correctional Center laundry may be saved through the capital budget. Since 1985, Lemon Creek inmates have done hundreds of thousands of pounds of laundry annually for the Alaska Marine Highway System. But the laundry is one of three prisoner employment programs to close. KTOO's Rosemary Alexander has been following the Corrections Department decision and has this story.
The Senate finance version of the capital budget includes $1.7 million for the Lemon Creek Laundry. While that won't cover all the aging equipment, it will go a long way to replace an old, undersized boiler.
We've had a boiler issue in this building for many years.
Scott Willard has been superintendent at Lemon Creek Correctional Center since 2005. He was hearing about boiler problems well before that. It's been limping along, heating water for nearly 500,000 pounds of State Ferry laundry every year. Add to that linens for a small cruise line that visits Juneau in the summer, and sterile laundry for Bartlett Regional Hospital. The threat of boiler failure drove that business away. Jim Strader is hospital spokesman.
The bottom line is they were estimating that somehow there needed to be expenditure of about $2.25 million to revamp and replace the boilers and continue the operation. I don't know how it would have divided up. It never got to that point.
Instead, the hospital decided to do its own laundry. Corrections facility maintenance staff believes the boiler has 18 to 24 months of life in it. Rather than plan for replacement, department officials decided to pull the plug. Juneau Senator Dennis Egan has another idea.
It just seemed crazy that one of the profitable industries of the prison was going to be eliminated.
Lemon Creek Laundry has made more than 20% profit some years, even since 2006 when prison industries became totally self-sufficient with no state general fund assistance. Corrections has been shifting that revenue to the money-losing and now closed prison garment and furniture factories. Earlier this year, Marine Highways got notice the Lemon Creek facility would close in September.
We didn't even know about it until we heard it on the news.
So Egan consulted with corrections officials. They told him it would cost nearly $2.6 million to fix the Lemon Creek boiler and replace washers and dryers, as well as fix the laundry building roof and do other repairs.
That's not really laundry. That's repair and maintenance. They should have been doing that all along. What we wanted to do was at least to get them some funding to replace the boilers so they could continue to provide laundry services to the state ferry system.
If the $1.7 million stays in the capital budget, a new boiler can be purchased. Legislators got word 2 years ago that washers and dryers were wearing out and put $72,000 in the corrections budget to begin replacement. The money wasn't used. Leslie Houston is Administrative Services Director for the department.
And now that it looks like we will get the funding to rehab the laundry program, part of the conversations with the legislature is that $72,000 will be rolled in and used for the equipment.
Laura Baker is Houston's counterpart in the Transportation Department. In an email, she writes that Marine Highways paid Lemon Creek almost $412,000 in fiscal year 2008 for washing 487,000 pounds of uniforms, towels, and linens. Responding to a recent request for interest, private companies in Juneau, Ketchikan, and Prince Rupert said they'd like to do the ship's laundry. Annual cost estimates ranged from $490,000 to $610,000 for laundry only. That does not include transportation to and from the ships, storage, garment and linen repairs, or inventory. But all of that is done at Lemon Creek.
You know, it's going to cost the state a heck of a lot more money to have their laundry done elsewhere. This has functioned well. You know, the neat thing about Juneau is most of the fleet at one time or another comes through here.
Senator Egan says the state of Alaska should do its own laundry. In Juneau, I'm Rose Marie Alexander.
The state Senate's capital budget proposes spending more than $45 million in cruise ship head tax proceeds. Almost all the funded projects are at or near the waterfront. That's a change from last year's budget, passed before the industry sued, claiming much of the money was misspent. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Officials at ports serving cruise ships say it takes a lot to keep the infrastructure in shape and up to date. Take Ketchikan's four-ship berth waterfront. City Port and Harbors Director Steve Corporon says there's some work to do.
Over the years, steel piling and concrete decking have kind of surrounded what used to be berths 1 and 2. And so now there's about 77,000 square feet of the old timber piles and timber decking left that are in really poor condition. In fact, it got to the point 3 years ago that we couldn't let the tour buses or the fire trucks on there until we did some emergency repairs.
The city already has $6 million toward the $26 million project. $10 million are included in the Senate Finance Committee's capital budget. Corporon says that's enough to get started on the first phase of the work. Ketchikan is one of about 10 cruise ports that will see more than $45 million in head tax appropriations under the capital budget bill. Still more projects could be added by the House. Last year's budget included projects in Anchorage, Wasilla, and Fairbanks. Finance Committee co-chairman Bert Stedman of Sitka says that's not the case this time.
We have focused this year the head tax expenditures into the ports of call that are more directly affected. Ketchikan, Juneau, Skagway, Sitka, versus some of the concerns the industry had where the funds were appropriated to areas that were affected but not as directly affected to where the ships are more.
Juneau will also see significant funding. There's $9 million toward a $40 million upgrade of its cruise ship docks. John Stone is the capital city's port director.
We're looking to both replace the docks and to align the docks to fit the size of the cruise ships that we currently have calling in Juneau. So we've looked at a bunch of alternatives, and the alternative that's currently favored is the installation of two floating berths to accommodate 1,000-foot-long cruise ships.
Sitka is also in the budget, with more than $7 million for several projects. The community does not have a cruise ship dock, so vessels anchor and bring visitors to shore on lightering boats. Some of the money will go towards a seawalk. Mayor Scott McAdams says that's a paved pathway along the waterfront taking cruise ship passengers to scenic destinations.
The vision on the seawalk extension is to really go from the bridge, which is where our lightering facility is, all the way to the Sitka National Historical Park, which I think would be a really nice feature in our, not only for our tourism infrastructure, but potentially also for local use.
Wrangell, Petersburg, Haines, Hoonah, Skagway, and Seward also have port or nearby projects in the Senate's capital budget. The funding is based on a $46 per passenger fee levied as part of the voter-approved cruise ship initiative. The governor and some lawmakers are trying to reduce that fee by as much as 60%. Finance Committee co-chairman Bert Stedman says that would affect the budget.
If we go in and make some adjustments in the head tax, we'll have to take a look at what's appropriated and take a look at that when we move that piece of legislation forward. If you're asking me, are we going to negative fund it, the chances of that happening aren't very high.
In past years, head tax projects have attracted the governor's vetoes, but that was in part due to disagreements between Stedman and former Governor Sarah Palin. Governor Sean Parnell, who held Stedman's finance job in his Senate days, has said he'd rather negotiate than use his veto pen. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Above the Arctic Circle in northwest Alaska, about 9 of the 12 mushers that left Kotzebue yesterday in the Kobuk 440 sled dog race are now at the fourth checkpoint in Ambler. Kotzebue resident Liz Moore is the official timekeeper for the Kobuk 440. Moore says from Ambler, the mushers will next head to Shungnak, which she says is an especially important stop this year.
This year's race is dedicated to a longtime volunteer who passed away this last year, Stanley Custer Sr., and I believe his wife will be at the checkpoint and have seen the mushers come in.
Moore says it's not known how much time mushers will take in Ambler or Shungnak. They are required to take 20 hours of rest somewhere along the route.
Then Kobuk, then back to Shungnak, to Ambler, Kiana, then to Norvik and to Kotzebue.
Moore says she expects racers to start arriving back in Kotzebue sometime on Sunday.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. And by Tech Alaska, working to permit the Red Dog Mine so it can produce for Alaska for another 20 years. Details at reddogalaska.com. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
A citizen-led government reform movement that got its start in Fairbanks is organizing Patriot Day rallies across the country. The Second Amendment Task Force is planning a large gathering at the Washington Monument for April 19th, while smaller-scale events are scheduled for other locations, including Anchorage and Fairbanks. Local organizer Coleman Barney of North Pole says the Fairbanks event is to reacquaint people with the origins of the country and freedoms.
April 19th is the anniversary to the beginning of the battles of Concord and Lexington, the beginning of our to the Revolutionary War, and so it's in celebration of our freedoms and our liberties and when it all started.
Barney says the event at Veterans Memorial Park will feature speakers, a parade of patriots, and potluck. Participants are encouraged to dress in colonial-style clothing, but guns are optional. Barney says the idea is to connect people who share a passion for liberty and are disenchanted with the current course of the country.
I don't think this is a party-affiliated thing. I don't think this is Republican versus Democrat. I think this is American thing that everybody's kind of concerned. And our country seems to be in a financial trouble in a large way. And I think the Constitution is under attack. I don't think this is just about bearing arms or that, but I think it's about what this country was founded on. And I'm just worried that we're going in the wrong direction.
The Second Amendment Task Forces has spread across the country since being started a year ago by Fairbanks constitutional rights advocate Schaefer Cox, a man who's had some run-ins with the law in recent months. He pleaded guilty to reckless endangerment in March following an arrest for choking his wife and was recently banned from carrying a gun after showing up armed at a Fairbanks home where he and others from the local Liberty Bell Network were monitoring a police search. Cox, who also leads up a local militia group, says he hopes the movement transcends his personal issues.
You need to think about whether it's you following me or if it's you and me following the ideas of liberty. Because one requires a flawless Messiah, or at least the perception of a flawless Messiah. And the second one requires a tremendous amount of endurance and resolve from both of us.
Cox claims he never attacked his wife and says authorities are going after him because of his activism. The local Second Amendment Task Force public message voiced by Cox and Barney is subdued compared to the group's national website, which is aligned with the Tea Party and takes direct vitriolic aim at President Obama and congressional Democrats. $62,000 Alaskans are on Medicare. During the heat of the debate over health care reform, the AARP, a more than 37 million member elder advocacy organization, took some heat of its own when it endorsed the final legislation package. Ken Osterkamp is the Alaska director for AARP. He says the organization lost some members during the controversy, but since the passage, some have returned. He says although some of the fixes AARP would have liked to see didn't make the final bill, there's a lot of good in it, and he says it was time to put a stop to some arbitrary practices by insurance carriers.
There are 8 states where insurance companies were allowed to discriminate against women who were victims of domestic violence and treat that as a pre-existing condition and deny them coverage. That kind of thing just has to change. It doesn't matter what side of the political aisle you're on. You can look at something like that and say, that's wrong. We can do better than that. And I think we did with this bill overall.
There's been fear that Medicare would be cut under the new program. How will the new health care legislation impact Alaska's seniors' Medicare?
That's a great question. There's about 62,000 Alaskans on Medicare. And what there is not are very many Alaskans who are on Medicare Advantage. People like to lump those two programs in like they're the same thing, but there's not. Medicare is traditional government-run Medicare. Medicare Advantage is a term that's applied to private fee-for-service plans. So what we're cutting are the Medicare Advantage plans, or more specifically, overpayments to those plans. Everybody who's in traditional Medicare, which is all Alaskans except for 0.5% who are on Medicare Advantage, the folks on Medicare Advantage will see their rates rise. Everybody else will see them either stay the same or actually control cost over the long run, because right now, if you're on traditional Medicare, you're paying 14% more to support subsidies to those private companies who are offering Medicare Advantage. That's going away. That's where the bulk of the savings are. That's what opponents of healthcare reform were using when they said Medicare is being cut. It was simply misinformation. So for those 62,000 Alaskans out there on Medicare, there might be 200 of you who will see your rates go up, and the rest of you will be just fine.
There's something called the donut hole in Part D prescription drug coverage within Medicare. What is this hole, and how has it been addressed in the health care reform measure?
The donut hole is a gap in coverage in Medicare Part D, which is the part of Medicare that covers prescription drug expenditures. What they've done with the new legislation is that for the Alaskans who fall in, for all Americans, but for the 10,000 Alaskans who fall into the donut hole, every year, that there is a little bit of relief right now, starting out, I believe, in 2011 with a $250 payment to those folks who hit the donut hole, and they'll get that right away. So that'll be some immediate relief. And then the idea is that by 2020, that donut hole is completely closed. So you'll see it go away eventually.
Those that haven't had coverage still, of course, need medical care at times. How have uninsured people impacted the yearly costs of those that do have insurance, particularly in Alaska?
Generally, we think that roughly $2,000 a year is what we pay in Alaska, those of us who have health insurance, to cover those who don't have health insurance. So ideally, what we're going to see as people acquire health insurance through this new legislation is them going and taking advantage of preventive care, getting their care earlier and less expensive, in a less expensive setting. And we'd hope to see some downward pressure on health insurance costs over time because of that.
At the end of the day, though, even with a huge overhaul, Alaska has a serious shortage of doctors generally, and especially doctors who will take Medicare patients. Is there any help in this legislation for this particular crisis here?
What's going to happen in the short term could be actually worse, and I'll just put that out there bluntly. As we get more people who have health insurance, there's going to be more pressure on doctors to see more patients. So that's going to affect their ability to see everybody, frankly, not just Medicare patients. But with some of the incentives in the legislation and with some incentives we're working on here in Alaska, we hope to increase the recruitment and retention of doctors, specifically primary care physicians, so that that problem eventually will be alleviated. There is, in fact, legislation in the legislature right now to provide loan repayment and incentives to attract physicians to Alaska. There's also a program to start a Medicare clinic here in Anchorage, which would specifically attack the problem of folks having trouble finding a Medicare doctor here in Anchorage. So there's a lot of good stuff happening right away this year, and some of the more painful stuff, they wisely slipped in over time so that people would have time to adjust. I think it's a really good trajectory for getting all this stuff implemented.
Ken Osterkamp is the state director for AARP in Alaska. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Casey Kelly, Rosemarie Alexander, and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Pan Air, operating since 1955 and providing 9 destinations with service to 36 communities throughout Southwest Alaska. Reservations and rates online at panair.com.
And by
GrantStation, your fast track to funding on the web at grantstation.com, serving Alaskan organizations for over 10 years.
The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.